Hi, everybody. I'm down here in the Chatterbox studio talking to Elaine Blanchard, the coordinator of Prison Stories, which is the show that we have recently released through Chatterbox Audio Theater. Elaine, so happy to see you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So Prison Stories, I think people should know, did not start as, of course, a radio play or a Chatterbox production. This started as a stage play with a group here in town called Voices of the South.
That's correct.
So will you tell me kind of how many of these have you done? How long has this been going on?
In January of 2010, I went to the prison and asked if I could have 12 women to sit with me in a circle and share stories. That I felt like that kind of opportunity, the opportunity to be creative, to have our voice heard, to work on our own listening skills, would be a way for women to get free in a certain way, to recognize their own value and the power of their own story. It was a theory I had based on my own experience that once I began to share my truth in my own story, I started standing taller. I started thinking of myself as a more significant person, and recognized that I had lots to contribute to the world around me. So I just wanted to try this out on a group of women at the county jail.
And why did you think jail? Why did you think, okay, that's where I'll go try this out?
I thought, where are a group of women whose voices have not been heard, whose lives have not been respected, and where are a group of people that we have stereotyped and boxed up into a very small package? And my imagination took me to the jail.
So you go wandering up to the jail one day.
Mm-hmm.
You say, hey, I want to do some writing workshops with some of the inmates here.
Yes, and it really was truly a theory. I had no idea if the women in the jail would want to talk with me. So you go through a process to get a badge for the jail and be safe to go inside. So I went through that process. And 12 women came into the room and sat down in a circle with me. And they clearly had not been given any information about who I was, what was going to happen here. So I said, you know, I've just come. I'd like to hear your story. And the process has worked, thanks to the women in the jail who are hungry to be heard, generous of spirit, and longing to make positive changes in their lives. They have been wounded enough by life, so they are eager for any opportunity to grow, to change, to become more. And I have been humbled by their willingness to trust me.
Well, I want to definitely talk about the effect that it has with them. But before we get into that, did you know at the outset that this would become a theatrical performance? Was that kind of the goal in your mind, or did that come later?
I planned to stage it because my own work has been staged, and I have seen the impact that true stories have on audiences. So yes, in some shape, form, or fashion, whether it was just to read the work or to make real performance out of it, I started out just sitting to share the stories, and I sort of let that first circle of women guide me in what they were able to put up with. To ask them, can I take these stories out of this room and into a public theater? I had to build some trust, I felt like, before I started talking with them about some of the ideas I was entertaining.
Well, I bet, because here you are, the stranger. You come in, you say, hey, I want to hear all about your story. I can see, on the one hand, you said they're hungry to tell it and to talk about it, but I can also see, well, who are you?
Uh-huh.
You
know?
So
exactly.
How do you do that? How do you build trust?
Well, you know, people ask me about that all the time, and it is the question I wondered, too, walking in. I think once you're in jail and you begin to see yourself as somebody who has really messed up your life. You're at the bottom of the barrel now. I think if there is an opportunity to write a new story for yourself, just to imagine a brighter day, better relationships, a new gift. It's important to the women in the circle as they begin to think of themselves as writers. This builds their esteem. So when I suggested that we take this good work, these interesting stories, and share them with the community as a way to break down stereotypes, as a way to help the community see these are real women, mothers, sisters, daughters in the jail. They were happy to contribute to that. And somehow the trust is there. I believe it has to do with my trusting them. I think it's a mutual thing that happens. I don't know when it happens. I don't know how to tell you how it happens. But it's in the circle. I never act like I'm there in a leadership role. I'm there as a woman in the circle. I don't give advice. I don't try to save their souls. I'm just there to compassionately and respectfully receive their stories and pass them on.
So are there ever any of those moments where you're sitting there and you all of a sudden you go, my gosh, we've crossed a barrier. They're really opening up to me, or is it kind of gradual? You just don't even realize it.
I've had moments in the circle where I realize that my wildest dreams are being realized, that women are right at this very moment receiving empathy from the circle in a way they have never in their lives received empathy from other human beings. And it shifts the way they sit, the way they talk, and it really changes the way they enter the circle the next time.
So, and are you giving them prompts? Are you giving them any direction, anything like that? Or are you just sort of saying, write and we'll share? How does it work from week to week or time to time?
When I first come, I give everybody two books, a novel, Zora Neale Hurston's Their Eyes Were Watching God, and a writing prompt book, Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones. We read the novel in 5 sessions and write reflection papers about Janie Crawford and how we relate to her or don't relate to her and her relationships and her choices and the good things that happen and the struggles and the pain. So we reflect off of Janie Crawford, write those papers. By the time we finish that, we sort of have some rapport in the circle. We kind of know each other. Then each woman makes a life map. I give them a big piece of art paper, colored pencils, markers, crayons, and each woman makes a map that shows her journey from birth to now and imagining the future, where the road will take her. The artwork is beautiful. Each woman then presents that life map to the circle, and we only get about 2 and maybe 3 done in a session. So it takes about 30 minutes for them to tell us their life story that way. And we listen. Then we tell the person what we really affirm in that journey. We tell them the things that we're curious about, that we'd like to know more about. And we tell them the things that we connect with, that we also feel, experience. And I write down the group responses and give that to the woman so that then she goes back, she's got paper and pen, and she writes about the things that we wanted to know more about. she writes about the relationships that we were curious about. And really, from that life map come lots of stories. I also bring guests in, other artists, singers, musicians, dancers, and they tell their story to the circle, why they do what they do, what their calling is, how they keep up their inspiration, and the group writes in response to those guests and what they learn from them. This last time, Memphis Child Advocacy Center came and did a 2-evening workshop with them about protecting our children from sexual abuse. So this last performance then, as a consequence of that, had a lot of response about child sexual abuse. It turned out that of the women in the group, only one had not been sexually abused as a very small child. And the one who had not been sexually abused as a small child was raped as a freshman in college.
Well, one of the things that I think really struck me when I saw the stage performance, or one of the stage performances, is that there are so many facets to these women. And I can see your process, how that would bring that out. Because you're not just talking about what they've done. You're not just talking about how they feel. I mean, these women are funny. They're sad. They're poignant. They have horrible things like that in their past. But to me, it's impossible to reduce them to either one thing that happened to them or one thing they did after hearing this, you know.
And that's one of the things that I hope comes out of this work, the realization that no human being can be reduced to a political party, a religious faith, a neighborhood, a demographic. In order to feel safe around each other, we need to know each other's whole story. And so it's my hope that this work kind of sheds light on the importance of giving each other a chance, of hearing each other out, and how sacred it is for human beings to really listen to each other. We pay so much attention to people on television these days and very little attention to the person across the street. And I think that's made us feel insecure.
Do you notice changes in the women? I mean, I'm sure you do, but can you talk about some of the changes from the beginning of the program to the end?
The women began to trust the circle. And so as we are together for 4 months, 32 class sessions, and toward the end, there is so much respect for each other and such an ease. We can enjoy each other. And we can also share what hurts, be grumpy, and know that everybody in the circle knows that we're more than our grumpiness. I just watch a trust grow and an understanding. And so people begin to look at ways and talk about ways they can use this experience once they're released from incarceration, that they want their children to know their story, their full story. They want to make amends with people, parents, siblings that they've been estranged from. They begin to trust themselves more, so it opens doors to trust other people.
Just to play devil's advocate for a moment, I'm sure you've encountered this question. What would you say if somebody said, well, these women are in prison, they're the wrongdoers, you are glorifying, you are promoting people who have done wrong? What about the victims? What about, you know, someone on the other side of that story?
Well, we're all victims, I think, in this world where crime, especially, we can talk about Memphis. Crime is everywhere. If your car hadn't been broken into, you're rare. If your house hadn't been broken into and some of your things stolen, then you're lucky. And I believe that one of the reasons we have so much crime and despair and lack of respect for other human beings is that we have so many human beings who have not been respected, have not been encouraged, have not been supported, have not been told that they can rise above whatever uncomfortable and limited circumstances they come from. So, it is true that people can be victims of crime and that the women in jail might be the perpetrators of those crimes. But if we simply say they should suffer, they should be punished, they should think of themselves as nothing more than the dregs of the earth, then we are guaranteeing that there will be plenty of folks here in Memphis who feel undervalued, hopeless, and desperate. And if I feel undervalued, hopeless, and desperate, it probably isn't too much of a step for me to smash the window of your car and take your DVD player or anything else you've got in there, if it might buy me a rock or a drug that would make me feel good for a few minutes. And what do I care about you anyway? You never cared about me. Maybe it doesn't occur to me we should care about each other. So I'm sure not going to care about your car window. I just believe it's a terrible cycle. And so one of the ways I'd like to chip away at that is to say to people who've been in trouble, I recognize you are more than the trouble you've gotten into.
You know, there's a lot, obviously a lot of powerful stuff that goes into this. And when I saw the show, the stage show, it kind of knocked me out. But then one of the things that knocked me out all over again was that when I was at the performance, one of the women who had been through the program and then been released came to the performance. Mm-hmm. And after the show, there was that Q&A, that talk back. Do you remember this? Mm-hmm. And she was just so, so effusive and so happy to have been a part of this. And it, I mean, she just, I think she moved the entire room talking about the experience of just being listened to for once. Mm-hmm. So you can tell that it made a very positive change in her life just to be, you know, working in that circle for an hour or two a week.
Mm-hmm. The correction system, as we have set it up, is about punishment and humiliation. So people pay their price. Nobody needs to think that you go to jail and you're well-fed and you have some kind of luxury life. It is all about punishment and humiliation. You are known by a number, first of all. So I think it is surprising to the women in the circle that somebody is there to hear their whole story and to recognize their potential.
So, okay, so you generate all this material, you have all this writing. So then how does that become a stage play? Then you take this out with you and what?
I take their work, and it's a lot. After 4 months, 12 women writing, it's a lot. And I simply type it into Word. And then it's way too much. So I start arranging it according to themes. And I try to start out the the performance before this last one, I started out with pieces that women had written about their church and what they love about their church family. And so I started with church and moved it to family and then moved it to violence and moved it to a series of arrests. And then we concluded by stories of hopefulness for the future. And I sort of distill it and put it in a theme, a flow. I take the themes and I try to give it a flow so that the audience can take a ride with us, take a journey with us through the lives of the women in the circle.
I think that's palpable, especially in this one that we just recorded. There are these just harrowing, dark passages that you sort of go through along with these women, and then all of a sudden there's a joke and it mm-hmm. breaks the tension, everybody laughs together, and it's very effective. So you have, okay, you take all this, you pare it down to a script, and then you work with Voices of the South. You're mm-hmm. a company member with Voices uh-huh. of the South, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, tell me about the process of finding actresses.
So we find six actresses who want to be part of this process, and Jerry Dye and I put the script on its feet in the immediately, as soon as we start working with it on stage, the script starts shifting, changing, and there's editing that happens. And then we add music to it to keep the piece driving forward. And in this piece, first time we've had original music. Virginia Ralph wrote and performed original music to go with it, which I thought just gave such depth and focus to the whole piece. But I can't say enough about how much I appreciate that new addition to the performance. And we perform first inside the jail. And the writers of the script are on the front row. And behind them are about 300 women who are living in the county jail. This last time they brought in even the maximum security women, which I appreciated very much because they haven't done that before. And then the staff, corrections staff, are there. And the family members of the writers come. Their husbands, brothers, moms, dads come and sit in an area. That's my favorite part, is meeting their families face to face. Then we perform the piece. And there is, it's a very emotional experience. Miranda Fisher, in this performance, read the story about one of the women's daughters being killed in an accident. And so the woman whose story it was sitting there sobbing as the story was shared, and Miranda was a few feet away from her, and she was sobbing too. So it's a very emotional thing. It's also very validating. And every time that we do this performance inside the prison, at least one of the women, the writers, has a reconnection, an understanding, a deepening of a truth with somebody in her family. This last time, two of the writers, as a consequence of the performance, sat with family members and came to deep understandings about things that have happened in their past that they've never talked about together. So that happens inside the prison.
And how do the actresses, I mean, obviously it's emotional for them too, but is that, I would imagine that'd be nerve-wracking to perform someone's story back to them.
Their true story in front of the person who wrote it. So it is, it's a real challenge. And to the person the actresses have come away from that experience saying they wouldn't trade it for all the money in the world. Mm. It's very satisfying to help in that way, help a person see themselves, validate themselves and their relationships. And it's so hope-filled. The other women, like there are about 300 women there, clap and stomp and just carry on encouraging each of the women whose story's been shared, because if one woman's life can be celebrated, then it's possible that all of our lives could be celebrated. And you feel that kind of group celebration in that room.
So you come off of that incredible experience, then you guys, I know, perform stage shows for the community. And mm-hmm. then, of course, this time we were lucky enough to have you come down to the studio and,
yes.
and record the show. So did you, when you came to the recording night, what did anything jump out at you as being different or kind of different focus from a live stage show? Because, of course, the stage show has movement. You know, it has some other things going on in it that we don't have in audio. But here what we have are those really detailed voices, very close performances. So what was it like for you to come down here and just listen to it?
Here in the studio, by the time the actresses had gotten here, they had been through 10 nights of rehearsal, 3 performances, and now here we were using this script in a new way. And the strength of it had been sharpened like a really good blade, so that in listening to it, they put all the force of the intent of this piece into that microphone. And I think people who hear it on Chatterbox will be able to truly experience the strength and hope of the women whose stories we're hearing. I really felt like it blossomed for audio. And it was edited too. There were pieces that were cut, and I think those cuts made it sharper, better, clearer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Well, I certainly hope we're able to do it justice down here. So when people are hearing this, and you know, we hope they're listening from all over the world. It's Memphis area, but much, much farther. What do you hope when the show is over and they turn off their MP3 player, what do you hope they have gotten out of it?
That's a good question. I hope that people are expanded, that they're less fearful about imagining that truly the people in jail are just as whole and human as those of us who have not been arrested and taken to jail. And that there is as much longing to belong, to be known, to be celebrated, to be given a chance for people who are in jail as for those who arrest them. I have a daughter, and probably a lot of what I do is because I have a daughter. I want my daughter to be safe. I want her to be healthy. I want her to be well-loved. I want her to be happy. And if there's anything that I can do to make the world around her a better place so that the possibilities for those things are greater for her, then that's what I want to be busy doing. And I think we all understand that.
Well, it's a powerful process. It's a powerful piece, and we are proud to be part of it. So,
thank
Elaine
you.
Blanchard, thank you for talking to me today.
Thank you, Bob.